Madam Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I must say I'm grateful to the organizing committee for inviting me to be here in this very important meeting. This is not the first time I participate in FGMC meeting here in Paris, and it is my great pleasure to address the important issue of ethical issues surrounding medicalization of female genital mutilation. And during the reduced allocated time for this presentation, which was just reduced a few minutes ago.
Sorry.
I'm going to address first about some relevance about female genital mutilation cutting, and particularly with reference to the issue of reinfibulation, and then medical ethics as we know them today, and then the medicalization of female genital mutilation, how does it violate the medical ethics, and then finally, what is the way forward? Well, I don't need to remind you about the definition of female genital mutilation, but I just refer to the type 3, which is known as infibulation, and not uncommonly, healthcare providers need to cut this scar tissue of the infibulation, and this is known as defibrillation. And then when we go re-suturing this scar tissue after delivery or after performing some gynecological operation, this is known as re-infibrillation. However, WHO, UNFPA, and UNICEF had shown that sometimes what is locally interpreted as re-infibrillation of a already existing scar is indeed a process of infibulation in the first place, and the chance of delivery or so is taken as an opportunity to perform the procedure. And reinfibulation, unfortunately, is mostly performed by healthcare providers, midwives, doctors, and if it is by midwife or doctors, usually immediately after delivery or after gynecological operation, sometimes within 2 hours, sometimes even up to 40 days, either at the home of the woman who delivered or at the home of the midwife who had been assisting the lady during her delivery. And reinfibulation is being performed, obviously, by adult women who just gave birth or underwent gynecological operation on the assumption that they feel to be covered or on the assumption that this is more useful, more pleasurable for their husband, or sometimes, and in fact, most of the women who undergo reinfibulation, they don't have much impact on the decision-taking in these cases, and they are mostly pushed by the family or their husband to undergo reinfibulation. Now, when we look at the victims of female genital mutilation, including reinfibulation, in order to look at it from the ethical point of view, we find that they are mostly girls between the age of 4 to 14, who are incapable of taking decision, incapable of autonomy, and infants, and women who are about to, or girls who are about to be married, and usually these are young girls as well, or women who have just have undergone either delivery or gynecological operation. And as can you see, most of these are unable to take their own decision, so they are unable to give their consent. And indeed, in spite of all efforts to abandon female genital mutilation, as was mentioned repeatedly during this meeting, that every year there are 3 million girls and women who are subjected to suffer from female genital mutilation, and during the coming decade, we are going almost to have 30 million cases of these. Now, how much of these are reinfibulation? Indeed, it is very difficult to have an estimate of reinfibulation because, as I said, it is done after delivery or before gynecological operation, and because also many women undergo several trials of reinfibulation, and some studies from Sudan and Ethiopia had shown that some women even underwent up to 5 times reinfibulation repeatedly after each childbirth or so. But it can be inferred, the number can be inferred, assuming that 10% of the cases of infibulation, they will undergo reinfibulation, and assuming that 50% of these will undergo reinfibulation, then you end up with around 6 million to around 10 million of female reinfibulation. But again, as I mentioned, these are only just speculation, but we have no evidence whatsoever of this. Now, from the medical point of view, does this procedure, whether FGMC or reinfibrillation, does it have any benefit? It does not have indeed any benefit, as the ethics committee or the FIGO on reproductive medicine had shown that female genital mutilation has no benefit whatsoever, and it is not associated with any advantage at all. On the contrary, as was mentioned during this morning, it is harmful, it has long-term sequelae, it has an impact on psychological performance or on the reproductive performance, it has immediate and late complication. And some of you have heard the news today that a doctor was jailed in Egypt for 2 years and a few months because he performed female genital mutilation on a young lady who died. She passed away, and that was performed by a doctor. So indeed, it is a procedure which has harmful effects, immediate and delayed, and it has no benefit whatsoever. So, where are we from the medical ethics? Let us look at the medical ethics as we see them. I am sure many of you are aware that the ethical principles, as we have known in the 70s and the late 70s, as advocated by Pitcham, include autonomy, which is respect for the person, and the ability to make decision, beneficence, the duty to do good, non-maleficence, the duty not to do harm, and justice. However, because of the rapid advances in the field of medicine and in the field of reproduction and the research, then these four ethical principles, they became inadequate to cover what is happening in the field of medicine and in the field of human reproduction. And consequently, the UNESCO here, the International Bioethics Committee and the Intergovernmental Bioethics Committee, and I was honored to be member of both committees, issued its declaration on bioethics and human rights in the year 2005, and that included 15 ethical principles. So instead of the four ethical principles which were there and we had known for a long time, there were 15 ethical principles. And in fact, when you look at these 15 ethical principles, then you find female genital mutilation indeed violates most of these 15 ethical principles, because it does violate the human dignity and the human rights. It does violate benefit and the harm, not undoing harm. It does violate autonomy and individual responsibility. It does violate the consent, because usually girls are unable to give consent. The person and they are person without capacity to consent, to consent, and also violate the respect for the human vulnerability. They are vulnerable people. They violate the principle of equality, justice, and equity. They violate the non-discrimination and non-stigmatization. Violate the respect for the cultural diversity and pluralism. Violate the protection of the future generation. Our kids, these are our future generation, and we got to protect them. And also, it does violate the social responsibility and health. And indeed, performing female genital mutilation violates most of these ethical principles outlined in the Universal Declaration of Bioethics and Human Rights. And the Article 14 of the Universal Declaration of Bioethics and Human Rights also said it is the responsibility of the society as well, and the responsibility of the government, that the promotion of health and social development for their people is the central purpose of government that all sectors of the society share. So it is the responsibility of the society and of the policymakers in the country as well. And this is particularly so because health, as defined in the WHO Constitution, the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health is indeed one of the fundamental rights. Everybody should enjoy the highest attainable standard of health, and that health is not mere absence of disease, no, but it is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And indeed, female genital mutilation violates the human rights to the highest attainable standard of health, as we have seen during this morning presentation, and to the bodily integrity and in the absence of any medical benefits, as I indicated earlier on. Now, in many countries around the world, FGMC is practiced, and indeed, we are witnessing a disturbing and an alarming increase in the medicalization of female genital mutilation being performed by healthcare providers. And this statement will come up on the zero tolerance for mutilation day on the 6th of February, being signed by UNFPA, UNICEF, ICM, International Confederation of Midwifery, and the FIGO on the 6th of February this year. And it says that it is estimated in 18% of cases, girls have been cut by a trained healthcare provider. And this figure goes as high as 74% in some countries. Just imagine, 74% of cases of FGM are being performed by healthcare provider. It is an alarming figure. Health workers performing female genital mutilation, indeed, are usually breaking the law in their countries, violating the fundamental rights of women and girls, leading tacit approval of the female genital mutilation, because if the traditional healer sees the doctor performing the procedure, then he will do it as well, because the doctor is performing the procedure, and indeed defying the most basic precept of medicine, the basic precept of medicine for us as a physician, do no harm, and indeed with FGM, you are doing harm. Medicalization of female genital mutilation, even if it may reduce, and this is the argument when doctors and healthcare providers perform it, they say, oh, come on, we reduce the complication. But we have heard about the cases in Egypt where women died because they underwent female genital mutilation by doctors. And even if you reduce the immediate complication, still you don't reduce the long-term complication, you don't reduce the psychological complication, you don't reduce the harmful effect on the reproductive performance of the girl when she gets pregnant and delivers, as the WHO study had shown before, with the impact on women during delivery or the child to be born for a lady who had been genitally mutilated. Medicalization of female genital mutilation creates tacit approval of the procedure, which only propels this harmful cultural behavior and its performance by non-health care providers, rather than tacit disapproval and discouragement to change the behavior. FGMC is an extreme example of discrimination based on sex as a way to control women's sexuality. FGMC denies girls and women full enjoyment of their personal, physical, psychological integrity, rights, and liberty. FGMC, even with the availability of corrective surgery, which we spend the afternoon session talking about it, even in the presence of this corrective surgery, is not totally repairable or reversible. Because still you have the psychological impact, you have the non-satisfied sexual desire, you have the failure of the procedures, so it is not completely repairable. That is not a tumor which you remove. Still, you have the impact of the procedures on the girl, even if you perform a reparative surgery, as we talked in the previous session. It violates the girl's right to protection, contrary to the ethical principles of beneficence, justice, and non-maleficence. How can we improve this sad situation which is existing? Because it's not only the fault of the doctors, but also, I think, the fault of professional organization and international organization and also the various authorities in different countries. Medicalization of female genital mutilation should be condemned at all national and international levels. And I think legislation, again, as a procedure, should be implemented in many countries. As we have heard in the morning, only 22 countries have legislations which criminalize female genital mutilation, which is not enough. But health workers, we as health workers, we have responsibility towards our policymakers, because we as healthcare providers, with our insider knowledge of the social dynamics, with our communities and deep understanding of the harmful practices of the harmful complications of female genital mutilation, we do have considerable influence to build support for the abandonment of female genital mutilation among the authorities and among the policymakers in our own countries. Also, we as healthcare providers have responsibility towards the society. We have to build up public realization that indeed it is possible to give up harmful practices without giving up meaningful aspect of their culture. And if some traditions prove to be harmful, then we'll have to give it up, and because this is for the benefit of the nation and the community. And UN organization, UNICEF, UNFPA, WHO, professional organization like FIGO, International Confederation of Midwife, and other partners will have to work together to ensure that health workers have the tools, because you cannot ask the doctor or healthcare provider to fight female genital mutilation when you are not giving them the tools that they would need to accelerate the abandonment of female genital mutilation and also to sensitively treat the complications that arise from it. So our role is not only just for the prevention, but also for the treatment of those who have been victims of female genital mutilation and underwent female genital mutilation. There is indeed an urgent need to strengthen healthcare providers' capacity to deliver high-quality, evidence-based care for women with female genital mutilation, as well as to prevent healthcare providers from providing female genital mutilation. WHO, we do know that WHO had developed evidence-based curricula for the nurses and midwife on the prevention and the management of health complications of female genital mutilation during childbirth. But this is not enough, because we do know that currently female genital mutilation is not included in the curricula of most pre- and postgraduate medical school nurses, midwifery, and public health schools. And indeed, recommendations about its clinical management and legislation are not well known to the healthcare provider. The problem is the doctor or the midwife, they graduate from their school and they have no idea whatsoever about the procedure. They don't know what the procedure, they don't know what are the complications, they don't know how to deal with the complications, they don't know how to deal with the victims of this procedure and how to care for them with tenderness, love and care in order to get them through the difficult time they go through when they go into labor or when they go before surgical procedures. Practitioner should explain the benefit, and when you are confronted with a patient who is coming for delivery and you defibrillated her to allow the childbirth to go smoothly, then of course the woman would ask for reinfibrillation. We as practitioners, midwives, should explain the benefit of unsuturing and advise women not to be resutured. It should also be emphasized that all female genital mutilation cutting procedures are professionally condemned because they have no benefit whatsoever. Women of all ages who have been subjected to female genital mutilation should be treated at all stages, including pregnancy and childbirth, with sympathy, respect, and medical evidence-based care. And this is a crucial point when we are providing health care for those women who have been victims of the procedure. We call upon health workers at all levels, from midwifery, nurses, obstetricians, gynecologists, to speak out, reciprocate the trust they enjoy in their communities, and mobilize against what they know to be a medical, ethical, and human rights violation. Finally, I close with this slide from the Girl Summit last year in London, 2014, which says, every girl and woman at risk or affected by female genital mutilation must have access to appropriate services like education, and I say education, 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 counseling, shelter, reproductive health, and medical care. Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Professor Sarur. I think we'll, like I said, we'll leave the questions until the end, but please write them down. Our next presenter will be Bettina Shell Duncan, who works in the University of Washington. She's going to be discussing the medicalization of female genital cutting practices.